You're listening to Gillespie Excellence in Internet Radio, only on FTRradio.com. And welcome to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I want to welcome everybody to this special Tuesday show. Tonight, we have on, you know her, you love her, from Red Eye and from a whole host of things from Fox News related, Jedediah Bila. And the co-host of the Whiskey Rebellion Radio, there with the John Brodigans, is Mark Radulich. Now, in the background, I hear a couple things clanging around, probably alcohol-related, so that must mean Mark Warner is back with us.
Yeah. You feel it, baby? I can too.
It's that time again. The time where we bring the best from the Midwest and Rhino goodness. He's cute. He's cuddly. He won't take a position to save his life. It's Mark Warner!
We came here at 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:30 to see them, and all they do is push you farther and farther away. And then they don't even let you see them.
Yay!
Mark!
Excuse me for a second. What?
Mark, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, it's a pleasure to have you back. I was talking with one Thomas LeDuc earlier today.
Oh.
And
I was having a good day until you bring that name up.
And he said he helped me actually get one Miss Jedediah Bila on the show tonight because it was short notice. And I appreciate Mr. LeDuc's attempts to persuade one Miss Bila to be a part of the show. And he said, you know, happy to do it as long as you get rid of Warner.
He said what?
hold on. I'm pulling up the direct message, actually, here real quick. He said, happy to help me out as long as I get rid of Warner. Something along those lines. Yeah. Glad to help a fine individual as you, Josh. Now return the favor and get rid of Warner. Anyway, so I told him I can't get rid of you. I can't.
No.
He
just can't quit you.
No, I can't quit you, Mark.
He's still bitter that he's from Michigan and they're broke.
Yeah, and his former governor went nuts at the DNC convention.
Oh, did you see that?
Before we get into
that was creepy.
I kind of feel sorry for Duke now.
Before we get into
that. You voted for that at one time?
Before we get into that, we should also welcome the Batgirl or the Catwoman to our Batman and Robin. One Smoozy Q.
Oh, Smoozy Q.
Hi.
How are you doing, Smoozy?
I'm doing fine. Sorry, the sound was cutting out there for a second.
I blame Mark.
That darn Mark.
Mark. Hey, Mark.
Before
we get into the whole Jennifer Granholm, going on, you were supposed to get us Clint Eastwood this week. How? he's not on. Now
why is he laughing, Josh? It was a brilliant idea.
It was a
brilliant
idea.
I told you in my email earlier, I apologize for nothing.
Actually, that's what I wrote.
Oh, okay. Well, I said, I apologize in advance.
That's right. And I said, I apologize for nothing. No. See, what our listeners may not know is that Smoozy and I, after we got done recording,
really,
is that
people.
Clint Eastwood right now? Is he calling to be on the show? Is
that yeah, he's calling it right now. We have that kind of relationship.
Nice.
I have a chair open for him.
Yeah, no. you know, look, it's hard to get someone like that on the show.
It is.
It's not an easy task, but I am working on it.
That would be awesome if you actually worked that out. Now, last week, Smoozy and I, we had our post-show chat about what we should do for the following week, and she actually suggested, brilliantly, because it would be a major coup if we actually got this, Clint Eastwood. And so Mark has been on the trail of getting the man with no name to be on the show.
This will be epic if I get it done.
It will be. You will have cemented your place in FTR history.
Can I have a 2-week vacation if I get it done?
You can have you can have a 3-week vacation.
A 3-week vacation?
3-week vacation.
Gosh, you're so generous, Josh.
If you get Clint Eastwood on the show.
I'm going to feel like a 1%er those 3 weeks.
Yeah, I want you to. I want you to live it up. Now, actually, to Mark's credit, because we like to give him a hard time on the show, but Mark does a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah.
And he has been working night and day, sort of, to get Mia Love on the show. And we may have her coming up. We may not. We still don't know. That's how awesome this show is going to be, is that we could be surprised with the awesomeness of Mia Love. Mark, what has it been like to try to get her to be on the show?
It's been tough just because she has a lot going on.
She does.
That RNC convention really...
Rockstar.
I mean, she was already a conservative rock star, but that RNC convention speech put her over the top.
Holy cow. And that speech was awesome.
There's a lot of people that want her right now. A lot, yes.
Hopefully, we can squeeze her into the show here a little bit later. But Mark has been working that angle for quite some time, and we hope to have her on. It'll be awesome. But we, like I said, we also have on Jedediah Bila and Mark Radulich, both New Yorkers or former New Yorkers, at least in Mark's case. And this is kind of our 9/11 remembrance show, our tribute show as well. It's been 11 years since the attacks on the World Trade Center in New York, as well as the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and the plane that went down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And so I thought we'd take the few minutes that we have to kind of talk about our own experiences. And I'll go first here real quick, just because we're short on time. But I was a young 22-year-old who had arrived in Washington, D.C. It was my first job. 2 weeks on the Hill. I was working for the Government Reform and Oversight Committee. Just that morning. Mark, are you taking pictures? You know, you can turn the volume off on the phone so that we don't have to hear everything that you're doing.
Shut up, Josh.
The messages that you're sending, the phone calls that you're receiving, the pictures of the drink that you're probably drinking.
That was a New Hampshire GOP staffer that was calling me earlier, interrupting the show.
I have a feeling it was. It does not surprise me at all.
I know, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
I mean, come on, you know what I'm doing.
Anyway, it was only my second week on the job, and we were actually supposed to have a hearing that day. John Ashcroft was supposed to testify before our committee. Obviously, that never happened, and it was just kind of a rush. It was very much like a movie, walking down First Street in front of the Library of Congress and the Supreme Court, seeing armed military personnel just watching the streets just to see if anything is going to happen, and kind of taking in the news that day. And that was a kind of a welcome to Washington kind of experience. Smoozy, what was your day like?
I was a little older than you. just a little bit.
We're not trying to make you feel bad, Smoozy.
And my husband at the time, who's now my former husband, still a good friend, was out of town for work. And I was about 7 weeks pregnant with Minnie Q. And I watched it kind of unfold on the TV at home as I was getting ready for work, and kind of was stunned. I had my brother-in-law at the time was a pilot for American Airlines. So I immediately went into panic mode, worrying that he was in one of the planes, but he was not, thankfully. I got a hold of my husband, told him what was going on, and went ahead and went into work just in a state of shock, and got there. And of course, none of us got any work done. We just sat around the TVs in the office and watched, eventually as the towers came down. And at that point, they told us they were shutting down our building because we were located right next to the arch, and they were concerned that there may be some additional attacks. So they sent us all home, and I went home, and it dawned on me, here I was, you know, pregnant and by myself, and I felt so very alone. It was a very strange feeling, and I know that I don't think I turned the TVs off in my house for like days, because my husband was stuck in Dallas for, I want to say, 3 weeks after that. And just, you know, I mean, obviously everyone around was going through the same thing, but it just, that was such a strange alone feeling, and thinking, God, you know, what kind of world is my child going to be born into?
Mark, what do you recall from 9/11?
I was actually in an airport.
Oof.
Really?
Yeah, so you can just pretty much what my day was like.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
It sucked. But nobody knew what was going on at first. But then the TVs kind of came on, and then we kind of seen what was going on. It was like, oh, okay.
Now, this were you living in Indianapolis or Nebraska at the time? Or Iowa, excuse me.
Yeah, it was, you know, that I listened to your situation that day, and that was, I couldn't imagine what it would be like to be on the Hill.
It was nuts.
I mean, there were
people screaming at in work, the hallways.
But you're on the Hill, mm-hmm. where you know that they're coming for you next.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you're like, okay, let me make my phone calls.
I didn't even have a cell phone at the time, and I remember, you know, I just walked along the street and ended up at Murphy's Irish Pub. And
grand old Irish pub.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I sat down, drank a Guinness, and watched the towers fall. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, the metro reopened, and I made my way back up to Silver Spring, and I kind of did what Smoozy did, and I just turned on the TV and just crashed and just kept myself glued to it. I was lying on my bed just being like, what has happened? It was a crazy day. I won't ever forget. And anyway, well, I don't want to put this make this a downer for the rest of the show. Hopefully, coming up next, we will have congressional candidate GOP rock star Mia Love from Utah. Hopefully, she'll be coming up next.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. We understand that if she's not able to make it, we know that if she's not able to make it, she should be on next week's show. So we'll make that caveat. But hopefully she's on next. And then we talk with Jedediah Bila and Mark Radulich. Guys, it's going to be a good show. It'll be a bit of a somber show, but it'll be a good show. So stick around. We want to thank Mark for returning for this week. And But we'll be back. You're listening to Gillespie on FTRradio.com. Stay tuned for more.
We just received the tape in from ground level. Here it is again, the president a short time ago speaking to the workers.
Thank you all.
Go ahead.
Lots of boom.
Go ahead, got it.
I want you all to know it can't go any louder. I want you all to know that America today is on bended knee in prayer for the people whose lives were lost here, for the workers who work here, for the families who mourn. This nation stands with the good people of New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut as we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens. I can hear you. I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Harry,
and compassion.
No, sorry.
To everybody who is here.
Cross the line on that one.
Thank you for your hard work. Thank you for making the nation proud. And may God bless America.
All right, let's get back a little bit, folks. Give me some room.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on this September 11th, our 9/11 tribute show. Well, we kind of did this show a little bit out of order. With me on the cell phone, of all places, yes, is the Smoozy Q. Susie, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I've had a long day of driving, and I'm looking forward to being home soon.
I bet you are. Well, I'm sure our listeners are wondering, guys, why is Susie on the phone? Well, as we mentioned earlier in the show, we had hoped that we might get Mia Love for this show, and well, the timing didn't work out, unfortunately. But it looks like we'll have her on for next week. So when you hear at the end of the show where I thank her maybe for being on, that's because we all recorded that last night. So anyway. Deal with us. This is the beauty of doing a pre-recorded show.
Right, it's a patchwork quilt, Josh.
It is. It is definitely a patchwork quilt, and we make it all come together that makes it sound like it's done right now, you know, or at least
right.
On Monday nights. But, well, this is the one segment that happens to be out of order, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, like we've kind of set the tone for this show, it is our 9/11 tribute show. And we'll be talking with Jedediah Bila and Mark Radulich a little bit later. But it kind of what we're doing with this show is we are paying tribute. You will hear coming up in a little bit, you will be hearing names of some of the victims of the Twin Towers. You will hear Paul Simon sing, I'm blanking again. What is it, Susie?
Sound of Silence.
Sound of Silence. You'll be hearing a little bit of Sound of Silence from the 10th anniversary of 9/11 there at the 9/11 September 11th Memorial there in New York. And so we have it, you've already heard the Star Spangled Banner. You've already heard President Bush. You can see we're going full bore. We are not forgetting this day.
Yep.
And we each had to do our own regular day. You know, Susie, you were in Louisville today.
I was. I drove over this morning and took a deposition, and I'm driving back now. And this morning I was able to listen a lot more to the radio and catch some of the tributes that they had on the radio this morning. And it was very, you know, it's amazing how quickly that emotion comes back.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I was watching, admittedly, a bit of MSNBC today. I saw one of the Democrats I follow, local Democrats I follow on Twitter, and he said that MSNBC was replaying all the events on 9/11, and I guess they regularly do that. So I thought, well, okay, I'll check the other cable channels first to see if they're doing something similar. They weren't, so I stayed with MSNBC, and I started tuning in after the second tower had fallen, and you know, really, it was just kind of wild to relive that day.
Yeah,
and you know it. You know, I had one of my coworkers came back, and she's like, I thought I heard Tom Brokaw. And I was like, that's because you did. And she's like, oh, what are you watching? I said, this is the rebroadcast of what happened on NBC that on September 11th. And she's like, oh, I can't watch this. You know, yeah. For some people, the pain is still very, very real and very close.
Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's hard to. I tried to watch a retrospective last year, and I couldn't make myself do it.
Yeah. Admittedly, and I'm probably going to regret saying this in a recorded fashion, but doing this whole show, putting it all together, and reading up, especially on the Friends article that you sent yesterday, which unfortunately we don't have time to get into, but oh my gosh, check my Facebook, check my Twitter, check Smoozy's Twitter. We link to it. It's amazing. But it's made me a little weepy. And I mean, this day, it gets to me. It really gets to me, I guess, because, you know, it's something that, you know, I lived through. You've lived through. You know, my kids won't understand the way that I don't understand Pearl Harbor for older people or other major events. But, you know, this was square right in the middle of my life, and I remember it. And like you, as you were pregnant, as you mentioned with the mini-Q, these are events that we will never forget. So, anyway, we have come to the end of this brief segment, and coming up next, we have Jedediah Bila. So stick around. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after this.
Kazushige Ito.
Thomas Edward Hines.
Farah Judy. Huidar Kian. Eliza Jimenez Jr. Luis Jimenez Jr.
Robert Francis Wallace.
Roy Michael Wallace.
Jean Marie Wallendorf.
Melissa Marie Harrington.
Aisha Ann Harris.
Stuart D. Harris.
Evan Gerard Siller.
David Silver.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I am pleased. Thrilled, really, to have our next guest on the show tonight. She is making her first appearance here. You know her from The Snark Factor. You also know her from Red Eye. And, of course, from her book, Outnumbered, Chronicles of a Manhattan Conservative, we have on Jedediah Bila. Jedediah, thanks for being on tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here for my first appearance, hopefully one of many to come.
Well, I hope it's one of many to come as well. And I feel honored that you happen to be on our 9/11 tribute show. And as you are a native New Yorker, you probably have quite the story to tell of what that day was like for you. So if you wouldn't mind, just kind of tell us where you were, what was going on with you on 9/11.
I actually used to work right across the street. At the time, I was a marketing associate at an insurance company called Zurich, and I used to work at One Liberty Plaza, which is steps from where the Trade Center was and where the new tower is now. I was actually in work early that morning. I used to get in at around 8:15. Was at my desk when the first plane hit the first tower.
Wow.
Was completely startled, had no idea what it was, found my way downstairs and was standing. I had to basically look up to see the second tower hit. That's how close I was. So ran through the streets with a bunch of other people, wound up having to walk over the Manhattan Bridge, I believe it was, and then get picked up by a family friend because it was really difficult to get in and out of the city. Spent some time that afternoon, I remember, in a complete stranger's apartment, just covered in soot because I was one of those people who was running through the streets. I'm sure a lot of people who weren't living in New York were watching that live footage that looked like something out of a terrible movie. Mm-hmm. So spent some time there and then ultimately was able to get home. It probably took me about, I think I finally got into my house, which was in Staten Island at the time, at about 5 p.m., covered in all sorts of building debris. It was a really horrible day. The side of the story that always shocks people is that I actually was supposed to be in the towers. My company had a meeting on the 105th floor of the tower at, I think it was 8:45 or close to 9. I can't even remember the exact time anymore. I've tried to get some of this stuff out of my memory. I'm sure you can understand why. But I was supposed to be in a meeting, and I never got the memo. I actually walked into the office and put my bag down on a chair, and my best friend called me, distracted me, and I never saw it. So by the grace of God, or I don't know what, I never got to that meeting. So I sort of look at the event for me, it was a chance to really reevaluate my life and my priorities and what I was doing. And I left that job very soon after that because I made a promise to myself that I was not going to spend time doing things that I didn't really feel I was putting my all into, my heart and soul weren't part of every single day, because you just never know what the next day is going to bring. So it was a very challenging day. It was a day where you bonded with strangers, where everyone was sort of looking out for each other. Obviously very sad. Things I will never forget were seeing people jump out of those windows, seeing them wave those white handkerchiefs or whatever it was, hoping for help. The sound of people hitting the pavement when they jumped out of those windows, those people were close enough to me where I could hear those sounds. Those are things that you never forget. For a short time after that, I remember that flying and getting in airplanes was a little weird for me, because the sounds, your mind holds on to sounds more than you realize. And I found myself getting really anxious being in a plane without even being intellectually aware of why that was happening at the time. And it was just sounds that were reminiscent from the day. So it's a sad day. It's not something that I don't go down to the site and do any sort of elaborate plans or take part in anything big. For me, it's just really quiet and reflective, and it's a chance for me to reevaluate my life. Every year on that day, I look at my life and I say, is there something that you're doing now that you don't have your heart and soul in? And if there is, I stop it, because you just never know what tomorrow is going to bring.
Jedediah, I know that you mentioned you don't really go down to the site that often, but what is it like now? I mean, you've been back since, I assume.
Yeah, I have been. I actually, I miss my towers. I always say they're my towers, because when I was a kid, I used to drive into the city with my parents. And when I was in college, I actually went to college on Staten Island, but spend most of my time in Manhattan. The towers were the New York skyline for me. That's what I would look at when I had my music on and I was driving and I was young. And so I miss them. And I don't, for me, the new tower, as beautiful as it is, will never be the Twin Towers. But, you know, it's a beautiful structure. It's a little bit different. I actually go down to the site, but I don't go down to the site on 9/11. So I don't really know if they do things special on that day in terms of visuals, if they have any sort of photos or memorial flowers, or I don't know exactly what's down there on 9/11, because like I said, that's a day when it's just not an area that I really want to be in on that particular day, just personally. But it's beautiful. They've done a really amazing job of memorializing the lives that were lost, and I think everyone sort of walks away from the site with a different experience and a reflective moment. But I think it is good that it's a very different space. It doesn't look like the Twin Towers. It's one big tower. They light it up at night, so you definitely can see it when you make the drive into Manhattan. You still see, you feel like that presence is kept, and there's something beautiful going on there, but it's still different. So it wasn't an effort to replace the towers, but more to put something there that memorialized the people and the families that were lost, and also had a symbol of pride in the country and in not being afraid of those people who wanted to take so much away from us that day.
Jedediah, you mentioned earlier that day kind of inspired in you to do something with your life and not do, basically you moved out of the insurance industry. Is that when you decided to get really politically active and forge this path that you're on now?
It wasn't at that moment, actually. What I went and did after that is pursue some things that I had wanted to do when I was a kid and never did. So, for example, when I was a child, I wanted to be an actress. I thought that was something I wanted to pursue, and my mom was a director. And so I went out to L.A. and I did a couple of showcases and really quickly found out that wasn't where my heart was. But that was a moment in my life where it was like, if there was any doubt or anything you wanted to do, if I wanted to climb Mount Everest at that point, I would have left my house that day and went and climbed it. That was the moment I was feeling. So I left and I went into teaching. When I had been in college, I thought I wanted to be a college professor, so I explored that, and I wound up teaching for several years. But I think that, yes, even though I wasn't pursuing politics as a career at that moment, I think that that was the moment when I became more aware of what was going on in the world. I had never been someone who got up every day and read the newspaper, to be honest with you. I was sort of immersed in an academic, creative world, art history, and was a little bit content sometimes to not know everything that was going on around me. That mm-hmm. day made it different for me, where I felt it was my responsibility to be aware, and that there were these really serious threats that all of a sudden weren't so distant and far removed, but were really tangible and right in front of my face. So I think that was the day I became more politically informed. I don't know about active. I think I had still some years to go before I became active, but informed for sure.
Sure. Very interesting. I mean, the perspective that you're bringing here, I think, is, I mean, we hear a lot of the same kind of beginnings of the stories. You know, my experience was in Washington. I was working in D.C. at the time. And, you know, obviously I wasn't at the Pentagon. I was working on the Hill. But that experience of seeing people, you know, running down the street, of that kind of movie-like feel to what is going on around you, but, you know, it's real life. You really don't know how to comprehend it. But it seems as if, you know, from there people have different stories, and I love what you're talking about, just because of that desire to pursue things that really interested you, even if it wasn't necessarily politics at the time. But, you know, you felt motivated to do something that you hadn't done before, but you wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, I always say to people, it really put the life back into my life, because I think oftentimes you go through life and you have chores and you have responsibilities, and it's really easy to look at your life as just a series of things that occur on a weekly basis. Okay, I have to, you know, I have to run errands and I have to go to work, and that really gave me pause to a point where I wanted to live. I wanted to laugh. I was going to stop and smell the roses. I was going to be stupid. I always enjoyed making fun of myself, and I was going to make that a daily part of my life, and I was only going to take things seriously that needed to be taken seriously, and make some time for family and friends that I hadn't necessarily done in years past, when I was sort of a nerd and very into myself. I'm still kind of a loner, I'm not going to lie, but I think it really made me look at my life in a new, a different way, and want to live every minute, so that when something small happens now, it hits me a lot differently. I'm able to prioritize things a lot better than I did before, because I know what real fear looks like and real danger looks like, and I know what it feels like to not know if you're going to be there the next minute. I truly didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if something was going to land on me. I didn't know if I was going to make it out alive. I didn't know if I was going to be able to call the people I loved. So I think when you're in a situation like that, everything else in your life takes on a new and different meaning. And sometimes it can be really good. It's the shakeup that you need to really get your priorities in order and find yourself again. I feel like we forget that in the midst of all the tedium and in the midst of all the chores, and yes, everyone has to earn a living, sometimes you forget yourself. And it's experiences like that, as tragic as they are and as heartbreaking as they are, that for the people who survive sometimes gives them a new sense of what their life's about.
Jedediah, the time has flown by with you. And as it seems that every time I talk to someone about the subject, I wish I had more time. And I know Susie feels the same way. So we will definitely have to have you back on to talk more than just about 9/11. I mean, obviously,
sure.
you have quite the resume. You could talk about a whole heck of a lot here. And so we definitely want to have you back on the show. But where can people find you on the internet?
People should go to JedediahBiela.com. I do Red Eye Weekly, Hannity. Red Eye and Hannity a couple of times a month, and columns over at AMAC, columns at FoxNews.com. But if they go to JedediahBiela.com, that'll sort of shoot them in the right direction.
Absolutely. You can also follow her on Twitter at Jedediah Biela. Jedediah.
That's correct. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Oh, thank you. The pleasure was definitely ours. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after this.
Diane M. Simmons.
Howard Selwyn.
Larry John Senko.
Arturo Angelo Serino.
Frankie Serrano.
Marina H. Serva.
Alina Sesanova.
Adele Christine Sessa.
Sita Nirmala Sunareen.
Daphne Ferlinda Elder.
Michael J. Alferis.
Mark Joseph Ellis.
Angel Trinidad.
Francis Joseph Trombino.
Gregory James Tross.
Willie Q. Troy.
Kaishiro Takahashi.
Keiji Takahashi.
William R. Steiner.
Eric Thomas Stein.
Edna L. Stevens.
I walk with a fever in my blood, restless for a place inside your love. I've been trying to reach you for so long. I have failed you and I've done you wrong. But if I have to, I will walk all this earth to find you. Find you. I've been dying to see you driving through the night. I watch the cities burn by candlelight. I know the world is rising through your door, but I won't leave you here with nothing but a ghost. If I have to, I would cross through this flood to find. Let go, I feel my love surround you. Just let go, I feel my love surround you. Yes, because I found you. Now people ran to churches, raising their hands. Sometimes I wonder if God understands. 'Cause I've been searching for you for so long. Oh, I need your touch upon me to go on. If I have to, I would crawl upon my knees to find. Everything will be alright when I find you. When I find you. If I have to, I would crawl upon my knees to find you. Find you.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Guys, we're continuing our tribute to September 11th. And we have on as our next guest a voice you may recognize. He is the co-host of Whiskey Rebellion Radio with the one and only John Brodigan. He is Mark Radulich. Mark, how are you doing, sir?
Hey, Josh. Thanks for having me on the show today. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Well, you know, when we're thinking of New York, we're thinking of guys like John, our guest last week, Dina Fraioli, our previous guest, Jedediah Bila, and, of course, Mark Radulich. And I know you're down in Florida now, but we want to, as kind of our way to commemorate the 11th anniversary of 9/11. It's really kind of all touched us in so many ways, and there are so many stories. I don't know if you could ever call yourself a former New Yorker. I don't know if that's allowed. It's kind of like a Marine. No one's an ex-Marine.
Let's say this. Nobody, if you live outside of New York, no one lets you ever forget you're from New York. If one more person asks me if I know Billy Joel, I'm going to elbow someone in the face.
You mean you don't?
No.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Aren't you best friends with like Rudy Giuliani and Joe Torre and everybody associated with the Yankee dynasty?
I went to a pizza place with a picture of Steve Guttenberg on the wall. That's it. That's all I can tell you.
Nice.
Wait, you know Steve, right? Because frankly, has he done anything since Three Men and a Baby?
Steve Guttenberg, he may have been in a Police Academy 12, something along those lines. I think he occasionally shows up in a movie that'll be loaded to Netflix five minutes after it's been shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Steady work.
And the only time I ever think of Steve Guttenberg is when I'm seeing, you know, an old episode of The Simpsons, and it's a Stonecutters episode.
That is a funny line in that song. That cracks me up. You mentioned it, and I laughed.
Exactly. So that's what happens. But anyway, so kind of back to the point. You are a New Yorker who resides in Florida, but. As it was, you know, where were you on September 11th, and what does that day mean to you, and how has it affected you?
Let me preface all of this by saying I am the world's most conservative social worker. That's sort of been my gimmick, but I am a professional social worker, licensed therapist and all of that. And at the time that I was in New York on 9/11, I was actually earning my graduate degree in social work, working in the foster care system for New York City, specifically St. Vincent Services in Brooklyn.
Wow.
I was commuting in from Massapequa, Long Island, you know, where the rated R Republicans from, the mean streets.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just gotten to work, and it was funny because our executive officer had come in late, and we were all making fun of her. She's like, see, the boss is in here late. She was like, well, yeah, I'm late because didn't you all hear a plane hit the World Trade Center. And this is shortly after news had broke about like John Denver and some of these other celebrities who have been flying like little Cessnas and having accidents, crashes and whatnot. So I didn't think much of it. And then we put on the radio and quickly we understood what was going on, or at least some of us did. The thing that I remember most about my office at the time, now you got to remember, for people who are supposed to be in tune with the human condition and, you know, the suffering of the common man, it's amazing how little social workers know about the world. So when crazy Muslim fanatics crashed two airliners into the World Trade Center, there was a lot of asking. I don't understand what's happening. I don't know what's going on. There was palpable fear, and we're in an office building on Montague Street, across the river.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it proximity wise, it didn't really affect us. Even when the towers went down and the smoke went up, for which I was on the Brooklyn Pier and I saw it live. Still an image. Wow. I can't really get out of my head.
Mm. Wow.
It didn't reach Brooklyn, but there was still palpable fear in the air. You know, you didn't know what was going to come next.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I was. I was in Brooklyn in the St. Vincent's Services office on Montague Street trying to, I guess, allay the fears of my coworkers, because I was somewhat politically in tune, not as much as I should have been at the time, mm-hmm. and not as much as I would be later on in years because of this incident. But I spent a lot of time just trying to talk to them and try to work them through it, because, you know, for all they knew, it was an alien invasion. That's how little they knew about what was going on.
Yeah. Now, I've read several accounts, just kind of, you know, again, kind of rehashing the whole we never want to forget. So, you know, about this time of year, there are a lot of people who are reading accounts. I have my own personal account of when I was in Washington, D.C. when this took place. But one account that I read today was of a woman who was actually a World Trade Center survivor, and she was talking about how she ran away, and the fear was that, you know, anything could be possible. There even could be bombs in the subway, that anywhere you're walking, I mean, the street could literally fall underneath you. I mean, what were some of the things that you were hearing from some of your coworkers and kind of your fellow students?
On that day in particular, like I said, there was a lot of confusion. I wasn't surrounded by people who had any clue what was happening. And so we were all glued to the radio or just trying to get home. Mm-hmm. Obviously, work was canceled.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
At that point, it was trying to make the long trek home. And as if you were in New York at the time, you know that the trains, you know, stopped moving. Everything just came to a grinding halt. So you have those pictures of people in Manhattan crossing the Brooklyn Bridge by foot. For me, I had to walk from Montague Street, which is, you know, right at the river in Brooklyn. I had to walk to the nearest subway station and try to get on the Long Island Railroad back to Nassau County. Mm-hmm. A lot of walking that day. Yeah. As far as what I could hear, it was a lot of listening, you know, a lot of trying to figure out. We heard about the plane in Pennsylvania. We heard about the plane in Washington, D.C. and the Pentagon. And I just remember saying to another coworker, this is just the beginning. Now, luckily, as far as actual attacks of this nature in the United States, I ended up being wrong. I think the United States has actually had a pretty miraculous record of stopping a lot of alleged terrorist attacks. But at the mm-hmm. time, I felt, and those who I was speaking to around me were pretty convinced, this was going to be the beginning of having to live in Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, Israel, that sort of thing. You know, I kept waiting for the mall that I went to blow up.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that this event basically got you sort of more politically involved. We only have a few minutes left, but what has this event meant to you since then?
Well, in 2000, I voted for Nader. And in 2004, I voted for Bush.
Ah.
That's the simplest way I could explain it. No,
That's a big shift.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that to this day I would describe myself as libertarian, maybe even left of center on certainly a lot of social things. But I felt that you know, I had to be politically in tune with the world and at least know what was going on. So the next time we were attacked, I could at least know who the attackers were.
Mm-hmm.
I became very, very invested in a lot of the books that came out, and I've since backed away from some of it just because it tends to be a lot of screaming from opposite aisles.
Yeah.
But I guess to answer your question, the event itself made me pay a lot of attention to what was going on in the world, and I had and reading a lot of books about foreign countries and our sort of history in those, for good, bad, or different. And that's really what I spent a lot of the next couple of years doing. It was interesting because as I became more invested in what was going on in the world around me, I saw a lot of New York sort of plunge into anger. You know, the most iconic image isn't anything having to do with 9/11 per se, and as to why I'm a former New Yorker. The Muslims didn't drive me out of New York. New Yorkers did.
And really?
I remember walking down the street, and like I said, I voted for Bush, and I felt that if there was one thing that the Republicans could do well, it was continue to fund the military and guide the military in a way that would put America in a way that would posture defensively.
Mm-hmm.
Is the best way I can put it. Not necessarily a war hawk, but I didn't think we were going to do some of the things that the Clinton administration did as Republicans, and that was good enough for me at the time. But I remember walking down the streets of Manhattan, and I remember seeing the name Bush, but the S was a swastika. And that's about the time that I thought, I got to get out of this place if it's the last thing I ever do.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I mean, there was some family things involved with that as well, but I got to the feeling of, if we're this angry and we see things this skewed, this is not the place that I want to be.
I was just going to say, isn't it interesting, too, because, you know, immediately after it happened, there certainly was no anger. There was just sort of shock and then unity. I mean, everyone was an American. Everyone was on everyone's side. And there was a brief period of time where people were able to put aside their philosophical differences, it seemed. But then it seems like it kind of, over time, erupted into a much deeper feeling of antagonism between various, you know, takes on who's responsible and how it should be handled, those sorts of things.
It seems like when we went into Afghanistan, that's when the rift started. You know, Janine Garofalo, who is not somebody I would cite as a political expert at all, I barely cite as a comedian, but Janine Garofalo was very much exemplary of the beginning of the rift. You know, she was one of those people who was out in front of the war in Afghanistan was unnecessary. Well, Afghanistan was kind of where the terrorists were. So if the object was to kill the terrorists, Afghanistan was as good a place to start as any. But, you know, there she was, her and her show, saying, you know, we shouldn't be in Afghanistan and this and that and the other thing. And, you know, I don't think people realize that, but that's kind of where the rift started to form. And then, you know, shortly thereafter, you had the next series of primaries and then the election. And, you know, by the time we hit the election, by that point, it was, you know, that was the end of the unity.
Yeah. You know, Mark, I feel like we could go so much further with this. You've brought up a lot of interesting, you know, kind of post 9/11 thoughts that, frankly, I feel like we need to have you back on the show just to kind of even dissect this a little bit further. But unfortunately, we've run out of time. So where can people find you on the internet?
Every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. with the Rated R Republican, John Brodigan, is the Whiskey Rebellion Radio. It's our sort of libertarian spin on the news of the day with a chuckle.
The Daily Show, kind of on the radio.
Yeah, we are the poor man's Daily Show.
Yeah.
when I get to really talking Jewish, I'm very much John Stewart. but anywho, you can also find me at 11 a.m. live on blogtalkradio.com/411MMA Radio. The 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show is my hour and a half weekly look at what's going on in mixed martial arts. You can follow me on Twitter at Mark Radulich and on Facebook, Mark Radulich, LCSW.
Mark Radulich, thank you very much for being on this week.
Thank you for having me. It was great. I look forward to another opportunity.
Yes, we will definitely be having you back. And you've been listening to Gillespie. We will be right back after these messages. Stay tuned for more.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Cause a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. Restless dreams, I walked alone. Narrow streets of cobblestone. Neath the halo of a street lamp, I turned my collar to the cold and the damp. When my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of sight. And in the naked light I saw.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTR Radio. I want to thank all of my guests tonight. Jedediah Bila, Mark Radulich. Hopefully we had Mia Love. If not, like I said at the top of the show, we'll hear from her the following week. But I want to make sure that everyone knows where they can find our team here on Gillespie. Mark, where can they find you on the internet?
MWarner95 on Twitter.
And real MWarner0003. Smoozy, Smoozy, where can they find you?
They can find me at SmoozyQ on Twitter and at qwithaview.wordpress.com. That's my blog.
And you can find me at Josh Gillespie on Twitter and joshgillespie.com, where you can find the entire archive of Gillespie there at joshgillespie.com. Plus, you can read the recaps of our days on 9/11 at our respective blogs, HoosierAccess.com, joshgillespie.com, Q with the View. that is going to do it for us this week. Stay tuned for the Snark Factor with Fingers Molloy and the Snark Factor players. You've been listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. And so for Mark Warner and the Smoozy Q, thanks. Have a good night.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?